It's Friday, and it's time for Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick. Join us from 3 to 4 for an hour of food, drink, and a little information. Call in and have a chance to win a gift card. Call 769-9577. Thanks for tuning in to Lakeshore Public Radio, 89.1 FM. Good afternoon, Lakeshore listeners. Thanks for joining us on Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, and my co-host here sitting in for Sharon Jackson, Jose.
Hello, thank you for having me.
How you doing, Jose?
Pretty good, pretty good.
You haven't sat in with me for a while.
It has been a little bit of a while.
It's been since probably last year during the COVID.
Was it?
Yeah, remember we were doing those special.
I think the last one was like the rat place, I thought. Like,
oh, was
the
it
jerk
the
cut, I think?
Oh, the jerk hut.
I don't know if that was
that
this
was
year.
Right, because you went there to eat right after that, didn't you?
I did. I did, yep.
I know. So how's things going with you?
Oh, pretty good. You know, just moving and shaking and all that jazz, you know.
Enjoying the weather? It's supposed to be getting warm pretty soon.
Yeah, I heard Tuesday is supposed to be like in the 60s, 70s.
That's so good.
That should be.
Yeah, we got some outside projects we got to get done. Just makes it warm in the kitchen as it gets hotter. I kind of like the winter because, you know, it's easy to cook.
Oh, right. Just throw everything in a pot or
heat up the kitchen and it doesn't feel like it gets hot. So as the summer goes, I love the summer, but then it gets a little warm. And
you know, ice cream. I like ice cream.
I like ice cream, too. Well, we're going to have Velpo Velvet on in a few weeks here. So.
Really? Oh, so I'll
be here. You're going to kick Sharon off?
I'll be here for that. Yeah. If not on the mic and the back. So.
Folks, thanks for joining us here on 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Let's Eat. I'm Chef Nix, and we got Jose in the captain chair over here. And we have kind of a really unique guest that has multi-faceted. I mean, she's got so many things going on. But you know what's really... You can hear? Okay, let's try this one. Can you hear now? That one. And she's a fellow Turkey Creek person. I grew up in Turkey Creek in Maryville as I was talking to her.
I used to live around there as well. Yeah, I went to Maryville High School, but yeah, I used to.
You know, when I found out all these fascinating things that her mother used to own the Turkey Creek flower shop over there and the tea room and things like that. So we probably crossed paths because we lived in the same neighborhood and we're about the same age. Mm. But it's funny how things turn out.
Wow. Yeah. Small world.
Yeah, very small world. So I want to introduce everyone to Angela Makrovitz. Did I say that right, Angela?
You did.
Okay. She does so many different things. She runs the Madison Rose Bed and Breakfast. She also is a teacher at Ivy Tech in East Chicago.
Wow.
She also does a catering. It's called, tell us what the catering company is.
Chef's Table Catering.
And in the past, she's worked with Better Homes and Garden. She's been in competitions. She's got all kinds of things going on.
Wow. Well, so, welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. So how are you doing today?
I'm good. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, thanks for coming in. And, we're all busy. So I know Fridays are busy for all the restaurants and things like that. So right now, you got all these things going on. What are you going to do right when you leave this show? Are you going to go teach? Are you going to go to Madison Rose? Are you going to go do catering? What are you going to do?
So I'm going to get ready for a sweet 16 birthday party.
Oh, really?
Yeah. For a young woman who her idol is Audrey Hepburn.
Mm. Oh, that's going to be interesting.
Yes, it'll be great. And so we'll get ready for that. And then we have a bridal shower on Sunday. And then we have the Lobster Fest on Wednesday. And then we have the mayoral event on Thursday.
So tell us real
quick.
So
every day there's something going on.
You know what? And Angela does catering. And folks out there, if you dial 769-9577, she was gracious enough to get some gift cards.
Oh, wow.
$15 off on a catering. So give us a call, 769-9577, and ask Angela a question.
That's a perfect time to get catering, too, because everyone's getting vaccinated. Things are starting to open. Summer's coming.
You got all these showers and
weddings
and all that, graduations, which I'm going to plan for my son. So, Angela, give us a little background about yourself. Like, where you went to school. I know you got –
Where do we start?
Well, just start with – you know, where you kind of went to school. You were telling me some interesting things back there. Angela's a pretty smart cookie, too. She went into Purdue at, like, 16 years old.
Yeah, so we'll start with 16.
Okay, let's start with 16. Sweet 16.
Sweet 16. We'll start with sweet 16. So I went off from an all-girls boarding school from Ancilla Domini and then to Purdue, which was an all-male engineering school at 16. And then from there, I've been in corporate marketing and the corporate world all my life. I landed in food accidentally when I lived in Texas. And after 9/11, everything closed down in the marketing field, and all my clients needed food. They needed catering. They needed some different things. So my first job was Mary Kay, the real Mary Kay.
Mm-hmm.
So she had hired me to do this huge event. Dallas Convention Center hired me to do their first event. And so that was my introduction into the food world, even though it was in my blood.
That's what I was saying.
My grandfather worked for Al Capone. My grandmother won the Pillsbury Bake Off contest.
Yeah, tell us about that,
wow.
too.
Yeah. So my grandfather has long lineage of the Italian, he came over on the boat. He was an immigrant. He worked in all the hotels in New York. And he worked for Al Capone. He had the first Flamingo restaurant in Gary, Indiana.
No way. Yeah. My favorite pizza.
Yeah.
I grew up eating that stuff.
I remember you saying that,
too. Oh, yes. Flamingo was the best.
You know, my grandmother won the Pillsbury Bake Off contest in 1966, I think it was.
And what did she present?
It was a little muffin thing that I think my grandfather might have messed up the recipe.
That's when you get the best stuff.
But anyway, she won that. My Aunt Clara owned Clara's Restaurant on 43rd and Broadway. My mother owned, the Maryville Florist and Tea Room. So there's a long lineage of food in the family.
And that's not what you went for when you went to school.
No, I went for corporate marketing.
But you know what? The food must have been just in your blood.
Absolutely.
I mean, did it seem like it was, I don't want to say easy because it isn't easy, but it came natural to you?
You know, I teach at the university, right? I think I shared that with you. And one of the things I tell my students is there are some careers that choose you and some that you choose.
Mm-hmm.
This career chose me.
And that's
like, it chose me. It said, you know what? You're destined for this. You have to go this direction. I didn't choose it because I would have been on Wall Street. I would have been a lawyer. I would have been an architect. I would have done a lot of things that I wanted to do. But food, for whatever reason, chose me.
Hmm.
And that's what I ended up as.
Jose, the Maryville florist, I lived in Turkey Creek. And mm-hmm. as a kid, I used to walk there. I used to just, I know it sounds weird, but I used to actually go in there and shop around and smell the flowers and look at and just buy a carnation, just to buy a carnation.
I used to live actually right across the street from the florist.
Oh, really?
Like there's a few apartments.
Have you ever been
buildings.
In the florist?
I have, yeah.
I mean, I was
so surprised that there's like a tea room and stuff in there.
Yeah, well, what was
and
the tea
room? And she
sold
it, you know.
Yeah.
Ramona sold it.
So what was the tea room
about?
She's
got a great... So the tea room was really to support the flower shop. Like,
mm-hmm.
that was really kind of her love. She wanted to... She realized that the flower shop wasn't doing real well, so she should do this tea room concept.
Mm-hmm.
And so that picked up and went off like crazy. But she just sold the whole thing this last year.
So we're sitting here talking to Angela McCorvitz, from the Madison Rose Bed and Breakfast. And if you looked online on the Bed and Breakfast, and Jose did, and the first thing he said is, would you say, you love to stay there?
Oh, yeah. Like, my thing is traveling, and I love little packages, and that looks so cozy. And when he told me where it was, I was like, in Maryville? Really?
Yeah.
Like, wow.
And, you know, and if you look at it online, it's really beautiful. It looks like something that would be in California or something. I mean,
right.
It's really, really cool. So your style and everything, you think that florist helped you? Because you seem to be artsy. I mean, you work for Betty Crocker, I mean, for Better Homes and Garden, and did some artwork with food. I mean, was that part of you? Did you do any flower arrangements? Did you do any of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure did. Yeah. My mom owned... I don't know if you remember Petals in Gary, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
She bought that, and I ran it for a long time.
Really?
But when I worked for Better Homes and Gardens, one of the things you had to do was know how to style the entire set.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to prop style, you had to floral style, you had to food style, you had to do the entire set, you know, working with people like Martha Stewart and... Rachel Ray and all the celebrities. We had to be on Sandra Lee. We had to be on set with all of these people all the time, and you had to be able to know they used to have a room, I called it a garage, but it probably was 10,000 square feet, and it had colors, lines of colors of things that you would be able to grab to put on your set.
So, like all the props and everything.
All the props. So you had to be able to know what flowers worked, what glass worked, what silverware worked, what flatware worked.
So the florist department had to give you a little bit of a head start.
Yeah, well, that was, you know, that was my family. They're very, my mother's very creative.
So how many years were you with Better Homes and Gardens?
Two years.
Now, what determined your shoot? What determined, I mean, did like Martha Stewart come up and say, hey, I got it, $10,000. I want you to put my cupcake on the thing, and I want Angela to style it and put flowers around it. How did that work?
So how it worked is you went through, the corporate name of the company was called Meredith. They owned all of the publications. They owned Better Homes and Gardens. They owned Ladies Home Journal. They owned Travelers, Condé Nast Traveler. They owned all the publications. So what they would do is they would give us a shoot for the day, just like you would for radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they would say, today you're going to shoot Martha Stewart's cake. And we would have to buy the food, prep the food, work with them for the food, show them how to cut the food, take pictures of food. Like, it was an all-day process just to put a picture in a magazine.
Now, when you say you had to get the food, wasn't Martha Stewart there to help you?
No.
Nothing
at just all. They show up for the film.
The final.
We're the ones that bought, that prepped, that did all of it.
So were they sometimes critical about your work?
I'm sure they were, but, you know, at the end of the day, you have to like it.
Yeah.
You have to like it. You know, I remember doing a turkey for Kraft Foods one time, and we had to do it Canadian, Mexican, American, and it took 20 hours to put a turkey under a camera.
Wow.
Because you had to get authorization from Mexico, from Canada, from America, to all these different people to authorize what the turkey looked like under camera.
Oh, wow.
It was a tough thing.
So tell us.
But it was fun. You know, like,
Of course.
There's nothing more fun than making a turkey and saying, like,
You know, it was fun. Let me tell you about it. You make the food. It looks beautiful. No one really eats it. And you're done. You don't have to clean up the plates or anything.
Well, I did.
Oh, you did?
We did. We cleaned up all the plates. Yeah, absolutely.
What are some of the secrets? I mean, like, when you see food stylists.
There are no secrets. You know,
I mean, because I've heard, when they do, like, a turkey and they want to do that slice.
Right.
They can't get that slice to roll. They actually use a raw turkey and they blow dry the meat on top just to cook that one few layers so when they cut it, it rolls.
So here's the beauty of Better Homes and Gardens.
Okay.
Okay. There are people out there. Actually, you can see on commercials where you see the flames and the smoke coming up from behind the bowls. That's fake.
Okay.
Or you see what's called a fake bottom on a salad because, you know, salad goes down. Like
right.
When you put a salad in a bowl, it's just going to drop. The one thing I loved about Better Homes and Gardens was that it was all authentic.
Really? Okay.
There was no movie magic. They were so authentic to everything we did. What you saw under camera was real.
Hmm. Any of your recipes ever get in?
Yeah.
Really?
I used to be the food... I mean, recipe developer. Yeah, I've got loads of recipes there.
How about your pictures? You get your pictures there, too. Wow.
I didn't know.
I didn't look all that
up.
That's kind of cool. So now you've done that, and that was just one part. You still do that? Do any of that?
No.
That was just a little part of your life.
That was a little part of my life.
And then...
They shipped me to South Carolina, and I got to work with a really famous chef called Natalie Dupree. She's written, I don't know, 350 books. And that was in Charleston. And then I opened up a restaurant there, got to work with her, taught food styling at the Art Institute of Charleston. And then that was a whole nother career path.
So who'd you like working with as celebrities? What's one of your favorite celebrities? You don't want to say?
Oh, man.
Did you ever meet Rachel Ray? She's one of my favorites.
Okay. No, she's not my favorite. I can't say that on tape. You know, Paula Deen, she's pretty authentic.
Honestly, I
don't feel comfortable saying about any sibling, because I can't say something kind like my mother would say, I shouldn't say it at all.
So basically you're saying there's two parts of them. There was the stage presence and then...
There's always a stage presence.
Yeah.
And then there's the talent.
Yeah.
And there's this huge gap in between.
Mm. Oh, so some of them really didn't have the talent. They just had the stage presence.
They had the stage presence.
Well, I can see that. So
sorry.
No, that's fine. So
I don't want to cut anybody down.
No. So you did that. Now, when did you transition to this Madison Rose bed and breakfast?
So, you know, I had the Captain's House restaurant.
Okay.
You know about that?
No. No, you tell us about
that. All right. So I opened up the Captain's House restaurant in 2015, right after my father died. And that was in Miller Beach. And it won huge accolades, huge awards, from the James Beard Foundation to the Northwest Indiana Chef of Steel to, like, we were in the paper every day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It was a seafood restaurant, which is kind of interesting because I don't eat seafood.
Oh, you don't like seafood?
No. But I knew my customers, mm-hmm. and they ate seafood.
Where Miller was this located?
Right next to St. Mary of the Lake.
Oh, I used to play Pop Warner football there.
So that did really well for 6 years,
mm-hmm.
and then COVID hit.
Oh, so this is pretty recent.
This is real recent.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's very recent. So COVID hit, and we were still doing well. We did to-goes, we did catering, we did, everything went well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got the contract for the pavilion, and I realized I couldn't do both,
mm-hmm.
because my staff didn't really want to do both.
Right. And right now, that's a big problem.
That's a big problem.
Right
staffing is a huge problem right now.
Yeah, for everybody. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're in a restaurant or if you're in steel mm-hmm. industry. Everyone's having problems finding people.
But the good news is that I've been able to bring the restaurant experience to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So personal chefing, catering, I take the restaurant experience that I had at the Captain's House and I bring it to the table wherever you're at. So if you called me up tonight and said, you know what, I need a dinner for two, me and my wife or me and my kids, there's only four of us, I literally bring everything. I bring the tablecloths, the linens, the flatware, the whole nine yards, the candles, the whole thing. It's like jumping in. It's like we came to we took the restaurant on wheels to you.
You know, and I understand what you're going through because I've done a lot of catering, and the hardest catering is when you got to transport everything,
mm-hmm.
and that's a lot of transporting. That's a lot of work. So you take all the food there raw and you prepare it there.
Right.
And do you do that for? Are there people around this area that ask for that or?
Mostly Michigan City, Long Beach, New Buffalo. That seems to be the primary market.
Okay. Is it just they like a little private party or parties?
Yeah, they're doing bridal showers. They're doing wedding showers. They're bachelorette parties. You know, all those B&Bs that are on that mm-hmm. on that coast, they're looking for a chef experience because they don't want to go to a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
So I bring the chef experience to them. Why not?
Folks, we're sitting here with Chef Angela McCorvitz. She does the Madison Rose bed and breakfast. She also takes care of the Marquette Park Pavilion. She's the head caterer there. We want you to call in 769-9577. She's got gift cards to catering. And the Madison Rose bed and breakfast. Now, how long have you been doing that for?
3 years.
Okay, so that overlapped the restaurant.
I saw the signs coming.
Okay.
So I called up Airbnb early and signed up the house for Airbnb. That was not a problem until we went to the city of Maryville or the town of Maryville and said, what do I need to do the license? And they said, we don't have licenses for Airbnbs. I said, well, that's kind of weird because you've already got 7 or 10 or 20 in your area. Like, how is that possible? They're already listed. So nobody's called you to find out about the licensing?
Mm-hmm.
So I just kept going on. Then I called the health department, checked that out. Then I called the big deal is I called the Indiana Bed and Breakfast Association because there's no one in the city, in the town of Maryville, that currently has a licensed Bed and Breakfast Association signature. And I was able to get that. They came out and they did thorough work. They looked at everything from exit signs, bathrooms, sustainability. Like, the list is 20 pages long.
So the standards
The standards are very high.
Wow.
So we got that through the Indiana Bed and Breakfast Association, which is huge. Because
mm-hmm.
you just don't get that easily.
So, but if you're a B&B, that's different than you try and do the, bed and breakfast.
It's the same thing.
There's
three rooms available. 2,000 square feet outside, rooms for rent. you know, catering areas.
So where's it located at?
Right across from Innsbruck Country Club.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. So
it's in a residential area,
mm-hmm.
and it meets all the standards.
And you have a website?
Yes.
Okay, and what's the name on the website?
BedandBreakfastMadisonRose.com, I think.
Okay, and how about, are you on a Facebook or anything like
mm-hmm.
that?
We're on Facebook as well, Madison Rose.
So how does it work? How does the whole bed and breakfast work? I mean, I've always heard about them, but I've never went to one. So what do? We just call you, Angela, say, hey, Angela, I want a room.
I want to get away. You want to get away for a night, two nights, a weekend? Right now we have it where there's no children or dogs or cats or anything, mm-hmm. To make it simple. You reserve a night. You know, a lot of it, the other thing we've done is reached out to the funeral homes, believe it or not, because funeral homes, they have these folks that are coming in from out of town and they don't want to go to a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a lot of out of town people that are grieving and they want a safe place to go. And they want a place to entertain, so you could actually come to the bed and breakfast. Your family can come over for the night, and you can have coffee and tea service or wine service or cheese service, and you can sit there before the funeral. We'll help you get through the funeral.
Hmm.
It's very private versus going to a Holiday Inn or a, you know, Marriott or something, and then you have to spend the night somewhere strange.
So when you come to...
Or corporate events. You know, there's a lot of corporations in Maryville that come from Japan and Korea and different places. They want a place that's sort of secure and safe.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't want to have to deal... They want a private dining room where they don't have to deal with... You know, they want it very intimate and quiet.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have to tell their secrets, whatever. And they just want a place to spend the night and have breakfast. So we provide... Full breakfast,
mm-hmm.
Mid-afternoon snack, wine and cheese, dinner if they want it, picnic basket.
Now, do you do all that?
Yes.
Do you take a knife and just cut yourself in half and just
no.
kind of?
That
just seems like it just seems like you got a lot going on.
Why would I do that? Yeah, I do have a lot going on.
You got a lot going on. So, how many people will that? Would the Madison Rose fit? I mean, what's the...
There's three rooms.
Okay, so what?
Two people, occupancy.
Okay, so six?
Six.
Six is... Now, do you ever do it like, say, someone wants to have a shower or something like that? Do you accommodate for something like that?
We do, but you have to spend... Someone has to spend the night. You have to use a room.
Okay. Describe the atmosphere.
Eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
Antique.
Mm-hmm.
Provincial. Sort of colonial, but not.
But there's an outside part to it, too.
Absolutely.
The outside.
And then there's an outside. Hi. There's an outside she shed.
Okay. No, but outside you have a nice patio.
Nice patio.
Like green, mm-hmm. greenery. And stuff. Now, can they get.
And there's
like,
a golf cart. People can tool around in the golf cart.
Okay. You probably offer charcuteries.
Yes.
I'm sure you do. What kind of notice do you need?
At least 48 hours.
Oh, that's it? That doesn't seem
mm-hmm.
like a lot
mm-mm.
at all. And what are the time frames? People check in at what time?
11.
And they use the exit?
3
the next day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, sounds pretty. I, you know, and we looked it up. Actually, it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
It's not like something... unreasonable,
no.
And especially when you got a bunch of people and you start to split it up.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a certain age group, you have to be over just, what, 21?
No, you have to be over 21. I just don't want your dogs, your cats, or your kids.
So,
because it gets a little crazy for
what's
that.
A typical guest there? Is it honeymooners? I mean, what's...
No, believe it or not, there's a lot of single people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of men that just want to get away.
And just have
a lot of businessmen.
So do you have different parties? Like this guy comes from Ohio and you got somebody else from somewhere else in another room? I mean, is it like that?
Yeah.
And then they can
And
just...
then there's 6-foot distancing in the main dining area.
Uh-huh. And then everyone, when it's time to eat breakfast, they kind of mm-hmm. come together?
They can. We send a little thing on their room and they tell us when they would like to enjoy breakfast or dinner or evening appetizer. And they let us know what they want.
So... Let's move over to the Marquette Pavilion.
Yeah.
Which is, to my heart, I remember it with me and my father used to go to the lagoon there and make fake boats and float them. And mm-hmm. I remember all the old Greek weddings that used to be there when I was a kid. Now, did they redo that?
They have redone it.
Okay, so it's all been updated.
Refurbished, updated.
Okay, So how many people does that place fit?
250, 300.
And again, now you're the exclusive caterer there.
For 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, how far in advance do they got to call to reserve something like that?
I don't think they need any advance. I think you can call today and you can get an event tomorrow as long as it's open. They're very open to serving. Kamisha Jackson is the person in charge, and Kiana Zell. They're wonderful team members, and they do a great job at making sure everything's taken care of there.
So they're the point people.
Absolutely.
Okay, so they get they'll work with you for the menu,
right,
and all that kind of stuff.
They're kind of like the maitre d' hostesses of the beginning service part of the deal. And then they will forward that information to me, and then I will work with the client after that.
Is there a certain amount of catering halls, or is this one big catering hall?
One big catering hall.
Is this still, like, all marble and stuff inside?
It is. It's beautiful.
It is all still marble, isn't it?
It's very Frank Lloyd Wright.
I just remember there used to be a toboggan slide right across the street from there. So
I think there might be.
There was a toboggan slide, and I remember when I was a kid sitting across the street, and it was all grass, like a grassy hilly,
right,
and you
can
see the lake,
there.
And you can see the lake from the hills. And we used to sit there and just picnic, and and have. So how's the COVID been with that? I mean, did it really just put a kibosh on the business for a while?
No, I think it did in the beginning, honestly. But I think people are over it. They want to get together right now. They really do. They're anxious to celebrate again. And
you're starting to feel that?
Yeah, totally.
So the special events, you have special events that you guys host there at the pavilion?
So the next big special event is the Lobster Fest, or the Seafood Fest. It's on Wednesday. It's the second and the fourth Wednesday of every month. And it's $18. It's a deal. And there's lobster rolls. This coming week is going to be lobster rolls, crab cake sandwich, perch sandwich, like things you can't get. It's restaurant style, cash bar, entertainment. It's a deal.
So
where are you going to go on a Wednesday night and get all that for $18?
So that's every week?
It's the second and the fourth Wednesday.
Okay. And that's something you prepare everything for?
Yes.
And these lobster rolls, I think I've seen that. That's one of your specialty
items? That is one of my specialties. We have lobster rolls, lobster mac and cheese. This week we're going to do crab cake sandwich and fried perch from Canada, which is we haven't been able to get lake perch, yellowtail lake perch, for a year.
And that was usually the one that was easy to get.
Yeah.
You know,
and we can't get it. So I was able to capture that, and we'll have that night. We'll have shrimp cocktail and cash bar entertainment all night long till 9 o'clock.
Okay. Now, is that RSVP?
Yeah. It's dining only.
Okay. So you have to make a reservation.
Have to make a reservation.
That's kind of cool. So now you got to balance. You do that. Now, how do you balance the? And Tom's also a teacher at IU Northwestern.
I'm only here to fill in for Jose for just a few moments. He had to run up front to
fix
something. But yeah, go ahead.
I was going
to
say Tom does that on the side. How do you find time to teach?
Well, I teach every Friday at Ivy Tech. It's a French classic cuisine, and you balance it.
You teach a lab or you teach class?
Oh, it's class and lab.
So would you say your style of cooking is more on the French flair? Or
no.
No? What's your style?
I don't know. You know what? I don't know if I have a style.
You got to have a style.
I don't know if I have a style. simple, elegant. I don't know if I would call it a genre.
You don't get too crazy. You don't get too crazy?
I can get crazy too. I can get crazy too. But I don't know if I have a style.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because people know my style when they see it, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
They can always say, that's chef's work.
Yeah.
So they know it.
Yeah.
I just don't know what I call it. If that makes sense.
We're sitting here with Chef Angela Mikovits.
Collins.
And we're sitting here, and it's 89.1 FM, Lakeshore Public Radio. This is Let's Eat with me, Chef Nick, and we have Jose here. And we're just talking about Angela about all her backgrounds, all the people that she's seen, and she runs a lot of different operations.
So I have a question.
Okay.
Actually, it's from a staffer here, so very curious. So a liquor license, are you guys allowed to carry it at a bed and breakfast, or do you have one?
Yes.
Yes.
You have to apply for it just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
Really? So you have to get a three-way liquor license?
You can only get a two-way.
Okay, so you pretty much have beer and wine.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like I have one. I have a three-way liquor license through my restaurant. And then when that closes out, I will have to reapply through the bed and breakfast. And I believe we can only get a two-way liquor license.
Now, what does that mean, three-way, two-way?
Three-way is beer, wine, and liquor.
Like alcohol, like vodka.
And then
two ways.
So when my liquor license runs out in May, then I will have to reapply. And I believe the bed and breakfast can only have a two way unless they change the rules.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, like.
Yeah. I like, you know, wine.
Beer and wine's okay.
Yeah. It's fine.
And you want to do it legally.
It's cheaper too. I mean, beer and wine. Yeah. Beer and wine is pretty much a yearly fee, isn't it?
Yearly fee.
And when I think of breakfast too, I think of
mimosas
at the very least.
I think of egg Benedicts when I think of a bread and breakfast for some
eggs
reason.
Eggs Benedict.
Yeah,
I do like that. That is good too.
And but you know, if you get the three way, it's a lot more expensive. It's like you're purchasing a house.
It's tough. Yeah, there's a lot of rules that go with it.
So now you're teaching at Ivy Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Now why the teaching? Why? I mean, you got so much.
I love to teach.
You like to teach.
I love to teach. I taught at Art Institute of Charleston. I've taught at the Trident Culinary School. I've taught at Kendall. I love to teach because I so believe that there are such hungry people out there wanting to learn the real world stuff that we just don't show in books.
Yeah.
You know, and as a restaurateur, as an entrepreneur, as a chef, some of my best students in the restaurant were terrible at the books, and then the opposite. You know, the best ones were, they couldn't get it together. But, you know, I just think it's so important to communicate and to teach.
Well, you know, you're teaching real experience in the restaurant.
Right.
You're teaching real experience. A lot of places, when you go, you know, I went to culinary, some of these guys, they're teaching it, but it's all about theory. This is how you should do it. This is how it works. But once you start working in the restaurant, a lot of those theories go out the window. It's like how you got to do it to survive. How do you got to work to, you know, people don't realize you got to clean fryers. People don't realize you got to do things like that too.
Here's the other thing. Most restaurants don't have the equipment that you see in a culinary school.
Right.
They don't have half of this equipment.
Right. There's no steam jacket kettles.
So they go into a restaurant and they're like, where's this? Where's that? They don't have any of it. It's jack by knife, like coming out of Goodwill, Salvation Army microwaves, you know, and they got to figure this out for themselves.
Yeah.
It's tough stuff.
Right.
So my goal is to teach these kids like the real world that says, what do you do when you don't have the equipment? What do you do when you don't have the resources? You really love this job? How much do you love this job? Because you're going to be there for 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. Kiss it up, suck it up.
Yeah,
that's how it works.
Yeah, if you're in the restaurant, you're on your feet
the whole
time.
You never leave. Like I said, it chooses you. You don't choose it.
Yeah, and you know what? It's you're only as good as the next plate you plate.
Yeah.
You know that's the whole thing with the restaurant. You feel like you're doing such a great job, but if you send out one plate that's off, it doesn't matter what you did all before or after. That just sticks with you. So it's all about being proficient. You know, with doing the job. I mean, has the students? I mean, with all these food channels and all this craziness going on, the expectation of the students. I mean, is it like really? How many years have you been teaching it?
A long time. The food channels have done us a disservice.
I agree. Thank you.
They've absolutely done us a disservice because these kids get out of school and they think they're automatically some celebrity, that they're entitled and they should never pick up a dish. They should never take out the garbage. They should never clean a toilet. They should never do anything.
They should just be there to tell people what to do.
That's it. They're just clueless. And the minute you say, that's not how it works, they look at you and say, I don't need this. And they literally walk out the door. I've had people walk out the door on me.
Wow. They pay for the tuition. They walk
pay
out
for the tuition. Yeah, $90,000, and they walk out the door.
And how many? How this curriculum? How long is it? I mean, you're trying to complete a culinary arts degree. Is that what it is
for them?
Yeah,
yeah, it's 4 or 5 years.
But you know, I've noticed, Angela, that everywhere I worked, I've learned something more than I did in school. And I went to a culinary school, and I went to Purdue, and got the hotel restaurant management, and I got a culinary arts degree, and that was all fine. But it seemed like, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but it's so much, you learn so much on just hands-on training. Is that how it kind of worked for you too? Like as you went, like you worked for different places, you kind of learned something?
Oh, always. It's always hands-on.
Yeah. I mean, it's
amazing. You know, I'm a true proponent of, in general, you know, I've told my students this before. If you want to learn funeral service, if you want to learn a trade of plumbing, if you want to learn how to be an electrician, if you want to learn how to be a hotel manager, go find the person that you think is really good at that and ask them if you can follow them for a week, mm-hmm. 1 week for free, and learn everything you can learn from them. Because really, people want to be mentors. You know, if I had a kid that called me up and said, I want to be a chef, could I just follow you for a week? I would have loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't want to share their trade with someone else? You know, you're a radio guy. If someone came in here tomorrow and said, I want to learn how to run a radio station, would you mention? Right. Okay, but Jose, he'd be crazy not to say no.
Right.
Really? You want to learn from me? Mm-hmm. I'll teach you everything I know. You don't need an education for that. You want to talk to Jose.
I mean, I'm not like, the best teacher or
but you know, Jose, like, I mean, there's something real about that. When you get real about the fact that you want to learn from someone who does the job.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm a proponent of education. Don't get me wrong. I went to school as well. I went to college. But at some point, you have to say, you got to talk to the people who do what you want to do.
Like I went to school as well for this, but, like, I'm not a cook or anything, but when it comes to radio, I did the same thing. You know, like I asked, where do I want to be? And I looked at Lakeshore and I was like, that's where I want to be. And I went in and now they can't get rid of me.
So have you had people follow you around?
Yes.
Oh, it has been an honor.
Yeah, it's fun. It's fun because.
Now, how many of them just say, oh, gosh, this is too much for me?
They can't do it. They can't follow me all day long. Right. I've said, wake up with. Here's always.
You know what? You were texting me at 1:30 in the morning.
I know. Sorry.
I'm just saying. I said to my wife, I said, does she sleep?
No, I don't sleep. But here's my thing. Follow me from the time I get up to the time I go to bed, and then you tell me if you want this job.
Yeah.
And see if you like it. Mm-hmm. If you don't like it, after you see what I do, then that's cool. You're not made for this. And that's okay. You know, there's other places for you.
So how many students, I mean, you just do one class on a Friday?
I had a hospitality online class, which I didn't really like because you don't get to really...
No.
You don't get to interact with people.
Yeah, my kids are having a problem with that stuff,
you know,
too.
The Zoom class, they check out. They say we're not... The computer backed out. We can't get to you. Like, I don't like an online class. The classical cuisine is 5 kids, and they have to have it to graduate. Mm-hmm. So they're like... They have to be there.
So online classes, is it like they set up their kitchen a certain way?
No, it's a hospital. It's an academic class.
Oh, you said hospitality.
Hospitality. Okay, so okay. It's academic. They have to read studies. They have to read reports. We're supposed to Zoom, but they don't go online. They don't connect with you, you know, and you can't, right. Like, what are you going to do with that? Like, you can't force them. You'd reach out and you say, I'm here for you. What can I do for you? How can I help you? How can I support you? And then you get zero. Like, it's like talking to a foam board.
So what do you I'm sure I got the, I already know the answer to this. So you probably preferred the labs.
I love the labs.
Over.
Because I'm a hands-on.
Yeah. I was the first.
And I'm a history buff. So I like to, the way I teach is take the concept and then go back to the origins. Mm-hmm. And then talk about how we got to where we went. Mm-hmm. So they understand it. You know, like we had a class on pork today and nobody knew anything about a pig. Go figure.
So that's how the classes are broken up, right? You probably have a class just on sauces.
Right.
you know, class
sausage on stoops, stocks, pork, game, meats. It's a French cuisine, classical cuisine.
So how about garnishment, garmanger? Do you have
like? They have that. Mm-hmm. That's a whole other class.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds really interesting.
Mm-hmm. It does. I love cooking, but I don't think I can work in a restaurant. Like, there's so much more to working in a restaurant from what you guys have talked about as well. Like, I wouldn't be able to cut it. Like, I like kissing my buns and then laying.
Well, sometimes I feel like I'm kissing people's buns. Too.
Kissing your buns.
Or like making things with love is what I was trying to say, but that wow. takes too long.
You know, the thing I like, what do you like better? You like cooking the entrees and soups and stocks, or you like baking?
I like all of it.
Really? Yeah. I like the other part, but I love baking. I think it's such an art. I think it's so precise. It's so different. You know, like when you cook something and, okay, you have a little bit, unless you're making maybe a hollandaise or béarnaise sauce, you're doing something like that. But for the most part, you can make adjustments and get away with it. When it's come to baking and you mess up, you mess up.
It's like a science.
It's like a science. Am I right?
It is a science. And baking is so, you have to be so patient. You know, I used to do stained glass.
Oh, that's
and yeah. That used to be a hobby of mine. And the one thing I learned from
you see your hands, you got a lot of cuts.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I know.
A lot of cuts. The one thing I learned from stained glass is you can't cut glass when you're angry. That was my first lesson.
Mm-hmm.
You can never cut a glass when you're angry or have an emotion outside of peacefulness,
mm-hmm.
because the glass doesn't cut. It's the same way with baking. You cannot bake if you're not in a space that is not patient.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to know that it takes time for things to rise, to cook, to settle, to sift. Mm-hmm. There's so many processes that outside of throwing in a skillet,
mm-hmm.
you can throw some oregano and garlic and some pasta, and you can just adjust it instantly because you're quick in your feet. But you can't do that in baking. And it's very much like stained glass.
So what's the largest event you ever did?
750.
Wow.
And that was in Dallas, Texas.
And what kind of event was it? What was it for?
That was for, what was that for? That was for the LGBT Mary Kay event.
Hmm.
She supported this big federal club event,
mm-hmm.
for the LGBT, and she sponsored the whole thing.
Hmm.
And they had so many celebrities there. It was at the Wyndham in Dallas, Texas. And it was for 750 people.
And what'd you serve them? Do you remember?
Yeah, Steak Diane.
Oh, you had Steak Diane.
Steak Diane.
Wow.
That was tough.
That is tough.
It was really, you can't, you, it's I mean, hard, what, to, it's you, hard to make Steak Diane for two.
I know.
Not to mention 750.
So you pretty much held the fillets on the side and then you plated them and then put the sauces on.
Yeah, that was a tough meal.
Yeah, I used to make a lot of Steak Diane at the patio. You remember the patio?
I do.
I used to make frog legs and Steak Diane. That was like the couple items I used to make. So what's the most exotic catering you ever did?
Most exotic.
Now when you say exotic,
describe
exotic. Come on, Jose. Pineapples
and tropical. Yeah, like you got it, like you'd be roasting a pig and you got belly dancers, you got all that, anything like that?
Well, I can tell you one.
As soon as you said belly dancers.
As soon as you said the pigs, then I could tell you.
Oh.
So I was living in Dallas, Texas, and there was a company that wanted me to do a roasted pig. But what I didn't know was that they were going to kill the pig. Like they chased the pig around the yard and killed the pig.
So you saw all this?
I saw it. It was a really bad deal.
Oh, wow.
So I would say it was pretty exotic.
And then they're like, okay,
and then they roast
it.
And then cook it. They literally, this thing squealed for hours while they killed this thing. It was bad.
Oh, man. I think I went fishing one time, and I swear I heard the fish say, no. And then I never went fishing again. Or at least fishing for
But I've had other food, exotic things, like going on yachts, mm-hmm. you know, like going on islands. Where you do things special for people, that to me that's exotic.
So like, that sort
it's
of
it's out of the norm.
So that sort of thing, do you make it like for the occasion? Like, do you do anything like tiki bowls or
Absolutely.
Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Now you still get involved with that? I mean, you still
sure,
do.
If they ask me to.
Okay, so you're not just doing the catering and the bed and breakfast, you're actually out there still.
Yes.
Now, with Better Homes and Garden, you still keep in contact with them? Do you still?
I keep in contact with some of the people in Better Homes, yes.
Okay. So when you did this Northwest Indiana Chef of Steel competition, what was that about?
I've never
been in a competition. The only competition was I've been in a couple food shows where I made an alligator out of bread or something like that. But
so I'm not really sure how I was picked, to be honest with you.
Uh-huh. But you were picked.
I was picked.
Okay.
But I was among five Northwest Indiana chefs of steel that had to go in front of all these people and share your recipe. So I did the crab cake or the crab boil.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I was picked for. And it was a competition. We went out to Crown Point. What is that big park out there?
Oh, the new Bulldog Park.
Yeah, the Bulldog Park.
Okay.
We went out there, and it was like 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours. And we competed against each other.
Mm-hmm.
Spiro was actually...
Oh, yeah, he's
Spiro
from
Spiro was the guy, yep. Spiro was the guy that emceed the whole event and... You know, decided who did what, and then we were in front of all these judges, you know, Benny from Gambas and Docs and a couple others, and they decided who was going to win. But it was fun. We got a lot of press, a lot of coverage on it.
So you made everything right there on site.
Absolutely.
Who won?
Actually, Nicole won.
From where?
Do you remember Nicole from, what's the restaurant out that she has, Fish Camp?
Nicole's Fish and Camp?
Fish Camp. Okay.
No.
She just lost her husband, Gary.
Oh, that's a shame.
Remember Gary?
Yeah.
From Miller Bakery?
Yeah.
That was a sad loss.
Yeah.
So talk about a sad loss as a chef. There's nothing worse than seeing another colleague lose their life to drugs and alcohol that you can't control. Like, you can't fathom that because there's so much talent. And to see that he was gone.
What did she prepare?
She prepared some sort of lamb dish, I think, is what she won off of.
And what was the grand prize? Just a pat on the back and a help?
Yeah, I think it's,
shell,
you know, I think,
they,
yeah, it was called, you know, like the crown and, you know, you're the winner.
Well, how about the James Beard burger? Nominee?
Yeah, James Beard burger. That was kind of fun because I was nominated for that. You had to take, the concept was to try to get sustainability through mushrooms.
Okay.
And they were trying to get, you'll appreciate this, they were trying to get people to eat less beef and more mushroom.
Okay.
So the goal was you had to combine beef and mushroom and come up with this burger and make it sustainable and make it exciting according to your restaurant.
Okay.
So, you know, I had a seafood restaurant, right? So I took, I called it the oyster burger. I took real oysters and fried them, an oyster mushroom.
Okay.
Okay, because both of those things are very sustainable in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
Oyster mushrooms take the toxins out of the environment and bring back. Oyster mushrooms do the same thing.
Okay.
So I combined that thing and called it the King Oyster Burger, and that's what I won for.
So did you win it?
Yeah. Well, I didn't win the total prize, but I was right there on the top.
Really? And who won the total prize?
Some guy out of Miami, I think it was.
And where was this competition at?
James Beard.
Where's
and
the...
you had to vote. Mm-hmm. Like, it was all over the country. You had to vote on these things, and it was all based on social media, really.
Mm. So what do you think is a good hamburger bun?
Brioche.
That's what I use at my restaurant.
Brioche.
I love the brioche hamburger bun.
A good brioche is the best.
It is the best.
It is the best.
So you,
maybe with a little onion, but brioche is always the best.
Yeah, you know,
pretzel rolls are really good too.
That's becoming the trend.
But here's the problem with the pretzel roll: it's so heavy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the brioche is light.
Mm-hmm. It tastes buttery.
It's buttery, and it soaks up all the other burger stuff.
Yeah.
So I would suggest do a pretzel roll when you have no meat, and you need to suck it up with bun. And use the brioche when the hero is the meat.
Yeah,
so it's an opposite effect.
So what do you think is trending now in the food industry? What are people asking you more of, like when you're getting to catering events?
I'm sort of like the latest trend?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, you know, that's...
I mean, sushi's a big thing.
No, it's not. It's not. It's they're really going after comfort food.
They're going
back to the comfort food thing. I hate to break it to you. They want the meat. Believe it or not, they want the chicken marcellas and the meatloafs and the stuff that they.
You know, it's
interesting. You know, what's funny is kind of comfort.
We're about the same age.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not a real fancy guy when it comes to cook. I'm pretty basic and everything. And when I went to culinary school, it was just kind of French cooking and, you know, a little this, a little that, you know, Italian, and it was pretty basic. You know, they taught you. I was just taught basic, and then the explosion of the Food Network. People got this big expectation that, you know, everything's got to have squid dye in it, or it's got to, you know what I mean? It just get all crazy, you know what I mean? But I think now people are starting to revert back to the basics. Because when I was a kid, chicken marcella was, ooh, chicken marcella, that's a big deal. Now you think, oh, that's just chicken marcella, but people want it again.
I do. I think it's all about comfort.
I think so, too.
You know, the number, it's interesting, when I do tastings for weddings, I ask them to pick an entree, a starch, and a vegetable. Do you know what the number one starch is?
Let me just get probably a potato.
Mashed frickin' potato. Mashed potatoes. Like, you want me to spend my time making you a mashed potato?
Uh-huh.
But they do.
Right.
And they love it.
I just went to a wedding, actually.
But I just can't believe that's the number one item on the... Like, you could pick any starch. Pick something interesting, like fingerlings.
Yeah.
Or three potatoes.
Right.
Tricolors or quinoa. Mm-hmm. Or something really out the wall. Garlic mashed potatoes?
You know what's funny is when I do catering and they want potatoes, I always have to put more than a normal portion.
Oh, my God.
Because people like...
Scream.
People love potatoes. They do love potatoes.
I'm telling you, it's all about comfort right now.
Yeah, I mean, you have, you know...
Or risotto. Risotto's, like, I'm doing a risotto bar.
Is that because of...
risotto bars are big right now.
Is that because of Ramsay? Every time
know.
He does something, he's got to have risotto in it.
Risotto bars are huge, and I'm doing one for a wedding next month. Risotto bars are huge. Creamy risotto with all kinds of different toppings. You know, shiitake mushrooms, asparagus, green beans, all Parmesan, you name it, roasted red peppers. Risotto bars are huge.
I love risotto. You ever have risotto?
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
It's you know, time intensive, labor intensive.
We've been sitting here talking with Chef Angela Makrovitz, and she's the owner of the Madison Rose Bed and Breakfast over in Merrillville. And we've just been talking about chef stuff. And we're at the end of the show, believe it or not. And you have the last words. What would you like to say? Who would you like to thank? What's coming up? What's new? What's in your future? You got about a minute.
Who do I want to thank?
Yeah.
All my customers, all the people that love me, that follow me. Mm-hmm. Are you kidding? Like, you know, I have a huge following of people that just wait for me to put out the next plate and do the next thing.
That's
and
cool.
I love that.
So, you got anything coming up new? Other than what I know, you got a lot on your plate now.
I have a lot going on.
But do you have anything?
I have a new restaurant concept coming up, but I'm going to hold off on that.
We'll have to have you back then. When
yeah.
You're ready.
Yeah, I'm going to hold off on that because people are asking me. I won't go back to Miller.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have a restaurant concept coming up.
So that's what we'll be waiting for.
Awesome.
So yeah. I want to thank Chef Angela Makrovitz from Madison Rose Bed and Breakfast. And what's the chef? Chef's Table. She's also at the Marquette Pavilion over in Miller. She teaches at the Ivy Tech in East Chicago. So you can find her. You could probably bump into her with no problem because she's everywhere. So we want to thank you for listening for an hour of, you know what, good knowledge about the culinary arts. And I want to thank you for stopping in.
I honestly love this episode. Like, yeah. I love the chef talk. Like, yeah. It's very interesting.
Are we off?
No, not yet. No. So we want to say thank you, though.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Thank you. So everyone have a great weekend. Enjoy the weather. Stay outside while it's nice out. Drive your golf cart around if you're out in the Lake of the Four Seasons. And Yasu.